Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome back to another episode of the LeadX Leadership Show, where I'm trying to make you into the boss that you always wish you had yourself. I want you winning Best Place to Work awards. I want people to say you're the best boss they ever had. Now, on today's show, I gotta apologize because I kind of go over the top. I fanboy over our guest, who you probably never heard of before, but he's the CEO of a company that delivers vegan meals, and I love them. I'm going crazy over their meals. No, this is not a paid placement. This is not sponsored. In fact, I was a customer, I've been a customer of theirs for about 3 months and 3 or 4 months, and I got pitched by their marketing firm to interview the CEO. So I jumped at it. But other than that, we had no relationship. He did not even know I was a customer until we were already recording the show. But before I get to that, if you're the kind of person who says thank you, I hope you will thank us for bringing you this show by leaving a rating on iTunes. It only takes a minute. Or leave a rating on whatever podcast player you're using, Overcast or Stitcher or wherever it is. And make sure to visit leadx.org. Check out the free training course of the day. You don't even need an email. You just go to leadx.org and it will start playing. And while you're there, check out the LeadX Academy. I think we've got over 50 courses now that are, of course, going to help you to stand out and to get ahead. Our quote of the day: the foundation of success in life is good health. That is the substratum fortune. It is also the basis of happiness. P.T. Barnum. Now, on to our guest. After getting diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2012, our guest saw that integrating more plant-based meals into his diet not only made a dramatic difference in how he felt, but actually altered the course of his disease. 2 years later, he went on to create Purple Carrot, the plant-based meal kit company. He started it out of his garage with a mission to inspire others to experience these health benefits themselves. The company has also partnered with 5-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady to create the TB12 performance meals, which are higher in protein. Now, remember, I live in Philadelphia. No fan of Tom Brady, and I think much of the country is no fan of Tom Brady. But let's put that aside, because other than that, this company rocks. Our guest is the CEO of Purple Carrot, Andy Levitt. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I've been looking forward to this interview. I guess we scheduled it up about 4 weeks ago because, and you didn't know this ahead of time, but I am a customer of yours.
Fantastic.
Now, what you also don't know, though, is that I'm from Philadelphia. So I did have to overcome the whole Tom Brady 12 thing, but other than TB12, I'm just a big fan and really looking forward to talking with you about this.
Thanks. It's great to be here with you.
I've probably done 250 interviews, including some other meal delivery executives and I think and other just business leaders. And often my listeners, I get emails afterwards like, was that a paid, you know, endorsement? Did they pay you to say what you said? We've never met. There's no secrets here. There's no paid endorsement. But I will honestly say, Andy, that you're the fourth meal delivery service that I've tried, and it's the only one I've stuck with. It's the only one I've stuck with. And I've been eating plant-based for about a year. And until I started with Purple Carrot, like, I'm not making this up, I was miserable. Like, I didn't like it. Now that I've found your company and your service, I am happy. I'm recommended to everybody. Like, it's really changed the way I eat, the way I feel, you know, my life. And I tried other, I won't say their names, but the biggest names out there. And I, for different reasons, I abandoned them. You figured it out and it's perfect.
Well, thank you. That really means a lot. And glad that we've hit the mark for you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, Andy, I have a tradition where I always ask our guests the same first question. Doesn't matter who they are. I love failure stories because I just think it's like there's no win or lose. It's win or learn, right? And I want to learn not just from my failures. I want to learn from a failure that you may have had. So share something. Like, what's one of your best mistakes, your best failures? What'd you learn from it?
Yeah, so thanks. It's a great question. I've thought a bit about it. I think that the way to think about the failures that I've had, and there have been many, is probably a singular reliance on either a sole provider, supplier, or even an individual. And I hope that theme resonates with your listeners as far as, you know, making mistakes by believing that one individual person as an employee or one supplier that we would work with could really be sort of the answer to most of, you know, the things that you're trying to solve. And placing sort of an over-reliance in that one area or that one person has proven to be problematic at times for me. And I'm thinking about my career within Purple Carrots. I started in October of 2014. But, you know, more specifically around those themes, we had a particular supplier that we work with that was playing a particular role in our business. And having that singular reliance on them really put us in a tough spot at a certain point where, you know, they had a ton of leverage over us from a pricing perspective and a supply chain. It ended up costing us literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, sort of the lack of leverage that we had. And they knew that. And it was a tricky situation. We ended up in court. I mean, there was a real lot of misery and heartache that went into that. So when I come to you to share that there was that mistake, I think in as much as it was a good approach for our company working with that particular supplier for that part of our business, in the end, the learning there is not to be overly reliant. And I think that, you know, since then we've become a lot stronger from that experience. Similarly, you know, placing so much value on a particular employee. And there's a couple people that come to my mind who will remain nameless who, you know, you think, okay, if I hire them, just imagine what we're gonna be able to do together. And you can get caught up in believing, you know, why their ego is the size that it is and what it's going to do. But, you know, the importance of hiring for fit and culture is so important. That adage of, you know, hire slowly, fire quickly, really resonates with us. And it's the letting someone stay too long can really have detrimental effects on culture, even though you place this belief that they're going to be, they're so important to our business or their name is such an important brand. That was really, those are mistakes that you learn to live with and live through. And, you know, I feel a whole lot stronger from those mistakes, but I think those are the key learnings there. Just not placing too much, not putting all your eggs in one basket, I guess, is sort of the simple way of saying it.
Yeah, I think that's it's a great lesson, again, business-wise or even individual, someone on your team. You can't have a team that you're relying on one person. And just to share further with our listeners, some people have told me that I'm crazy to do this, but even on a micro level, like when I'm looking for, with as much writing I do, I occasionally will work with writing partners or ghostwriters on some pieces. I'm very picky. They're really hard to find. And when I've gone on these websites where you can hire, you know, freelance talent, sometimes I'll pick two or three people and pay to get the same article written three different times, because I know that at least one's going to be a disaster. One's maybe okay. And I'm hoping for that one. But then I also know long term, it's like, okay, I'm not going to pay for three articles, every single article, but I can create a stable of writers, not one writer, but a stable.
Right. And I'm sure the challenge is if you were just starting out, you could probably only afford one writer barely,
right,
and beg some favors and special pricing. And you're not going to have that optionality in front of you to explore that. So in those early stages, it can be really tough. It sometimes comes down to luck.
Right.
I think, and then knowing when you've got to pivot off of something that you've made that bet on, because you may not have the luxury of having multiple people on staff or multiple suppliers or writers, what have you, whatever capacity those people are playing for you. But that's part of the challenge and the joy of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you've had obviously a long, successful career, you know, before doing the entrepreneur thing. You were working in big pharma. My early companies were vendors to Ethicon and others that you know of. There's so much out there on management, on leadership. What advice would you give to a first-time manager, someone new, and, you know, she wants to be great, but where do you start?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, going back to what I was saying a moment ago about at the beginning and hiring people, when I first got started out in this role, at least, I always like to hire athletes, you know, in quotes, right? Someone who can play multiple roles, who was smarter than I was on any particular issue. And it was really hiring for generalists who were excited about things. And I've liked that model. And then as we've grown, we've needed to really refine that and focus more on specialists who are going to do particular roles as our company has grown significantly. We've moved out of that. But from a first-time perspective, I think hiring athletes is important. I think you can't underestimate the importance of culture and hiring for culture and nurturing the culture that you want to create and standing by that and letting your actions align to those virtues and align to that culture that you're creating and putting in sort of the emotional labor with your staff to show them what you care about and how you behave and how you act. I think, you know, a couple more things come to mind. One is it's great to say no. And I think a lot of first-time managers and people in general, you know, and I think of myself as a people pleaser. And so you want to say yes to people. And it's so powerful to say no. And you don't have to be a jerk about it when you say it, but to be very selective on the things that you say yes to, be very selective on the areas where you invest your energy. Because when you're first starting out, it's so nice when people want to sell you something or get involved with what you're doing. And it's very easy to get sort of, you know, distracted from a very focused area. And that's so important. And I think the last point around that ties back to being focused. And for me, it's been about making meaning. And not just going after money, but rather really understanding what you're trying to accomplish and placing value to what you do. So that adage of do what you love and the money will follow very much has resonated with me. It comes from learnings from a guy named Guy Kawasaki from the book Art of the Start, which is a great read. I highly recommend it.
One of my favorite entrepreneur books that most people don't talk about. I mean, it's really, really good.
Yeah, and you know, Guy is a big top 10 list person, and the first thing in his top 10 list of that book is make meaning. And so if you can then focus a company and build a company around that idea, and you can then align your employees to be thinking in the same way and get everyone sort of at least moving in the same direction, they certainly should and can think differently in how they approach problems, but to at least all be focused on sort of that, you know, North Star and end in mind, I think is really important as well.
That's great. Now, I want to get at the issue of work-life balance. I don't really like that term, work-life blend, whatever it is. But I want to start by saying, I mean, well, I was planning to ask you about this anyway, but just in the couple of minutes we've had together, you seem to be incredibly chill, really relaxed, present, like just focused, relaxed. I interview a lot of CEOs, and most of them don't have the vibe that you're giving off right now. And not only are you the founder and CEO of this fast-growing entrepreneurial company, you're married, you have four kids. So what's the secret? Like, what are you doing right that others need to be learning from?
You're very kind. The idea of work-life balance to me is, I think it comes from a place where people don't work for themselves. I realize entrepreneurial life is not for everyone. I totally recognize that. For me, for better or worse, that's who I am. And I'm an entrepreneur and I love it. And I've been doing this for about 11 years and I would never trade it and change it. And because I'm an entrepreneur and because I said, I'm going to chart my own path here and I'm going to bet on myself and pick myself instead of letting others pick me, the work doesn't feel like work to me. It's just a joy and it's a privilege to do what I do. And I'm so lucky that I have the chance to do it. So my work, as hard as I work, and I think I work pretty darn hard, like probably most people you speak to, my work never feels like I need to balance something because I'm not out of balance. I just am doing what I do. At the same time, I have an amazing wife. I got four beautiful kids. They're 8, 6, 4, and 2. And they're certainly a handful and it's a challenge. And, you know, someone once said to me, it's the hardest job you'll ever love. And I take so much pride in my wife and my children and the relationship that we all have together that I don't need them to balance me out. They just are also part of my life and who I am. So I don't know if that sounds trite, but the reality is that I think people need a work-life balance when they need to balance out the less desirable part
right
of their life, which is, God, I got to work. I got to go to work. I got to travel. I got to go to this meeting. My boss is a jerk. I have to fill in this report. And all those kinds of things that the reality is most people follow and have to endure. And so I endure a lot of other things and stress that comes with being an entrepreneur. But I think that I'm really, really fortunate to do what I do and to have a loving, supportive family around me that makes it possible. And then I just get to spend time with them or with the people that I kind of think of as family as the people that I work with. And so then it's just life.
Right. Well, but you just said that, well, when it comes to kids, and I totally agree, it's, you know, the best thing, they're the best thing in the world and the hardest thing. And you talked about feeling some stress as an entrepreneur. You don't seem to be showing much stress. Do you have routines that help you, you know, with the tough part of parenting or, you know, being an entrepreneur, morning routines, fitness things? We know you eat plant-based, but other than that, what else is your secret?
Yeah, you know, I think that I still rely a lot on my wife, on my parents, on some close friends. I have an opportunity to speak to them and process some of the stress that I go through. My kids do provide a great stress reliever when, you know, one of my favorite parts of my day is when I come home at the end of the day and I open the door and they yell, "Daddy," and they all come running towards me. It's really priceless. But, you know, I do exercise not as often as I would like, and I'm working on that. But one thing I'm a massive fan of is the Peloton bike. So I'm so intrigued by the business model and admire the business model of Peloton. It's, for those of you who don't know it, it's a home spin bike that is in a subscription-based service, and you pay like $39 a month, and you have unlimited spin classes through this great computer interface on your bike. And so from the comfort of your own home, you really have no excuse not to exercise. And so that's a great sort of stress reliever for me. I do try to eat healthy and, you know, follow largely a plant-based diet. I cheat every now and then, and I think that makes it interesting. But
in the Peloton, to go back for those who don't know, it's not just that these are like videos. You're actually riding with other people in other parts of the world.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's this on-demand. You can take on-demand classes that have been recorded already, or you can stream into a live class. And the brilliance behind that is the data, where no matter where you are in your ride, whether it's a live ride or something that was filmed a year ago, they pull in the data at that exact moment where you are. So it feels as if you're taking a live ride. Mm-hmm. And your data is being measured up against those others. So it forces you, every time I get on there, I'll think, okay, I'm just gonna do a nice, you know, half hour ride, just get my heart rate up a bit or sweat, or do 45 minutes. And then as you're going through it, you're watching your data, you're like, okay, I can go a little bit harder, a little bit harder. And it just drives you to do even better than you were otherwise. I think that's a great tool. It's a nice way just to decompress and take some stress out of your life. And I have to say, when you eat cleanly, I think that also helps. You feel good, helps you sleep better at night, I think. Overall, you just feel good about how you're living.
Were you into spin before you got the Peloton?
Yeah, I like spinning. There's a studio that I go to that's not too far. I bought the Peloton for my wife as a present after she delivered our fourth child. And that was sort of this push present. And she's been obsessed with it. She loves it. And so I get to use it. You know, it's her bike, but I use it sometimes too.
That's great. This is a selfish question. I'm just curious. So I was having, it was a TB12 meal with my 17-year-old daughter who eats plant-based as well. She's a theater kid. She's into the arts. She's not an entrepreneur like dad. She's not a science person. We're in the middle of the meal and she's been digging. She really likes it that I've signed up because now we're eating well. She says, "Dad, do you know how hard this company is?" Out of the blue. And I said, "I think it's probably pretty hard, but what are you talking about?" And she says, "First of all, they got to figure out the recipes, but then they got to go to all these different people to get the food delivered to them that they then have to repack to deliver their customers." And she said, "How do they know how much food to order when it takes time to get there, and they don't know how many customers they're going to have in the future?" And I said, "Yeah," I said, "this supply chain has got to be wicked." So I'm curious, it has to be a very tough business, you know, supply chain and everything else. What's the toughest part? You know, you've been at this a lot of years now. What has been the toughest part to figure out?
Yeah, you know, the supply chain side of things is very complex. I knew so little when I started out of my garage in the fall of 2014. I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by an incredible team of people who I get to work with every day, who really know how to optimize the supply chain and have gotten so good at predicting our subscriber base and how people may skip or enroll each week, to balance that out, to minimize any waste that comes from our process of ordering a variety of both perishable and non-perishable items. You know, I think the hardest part about the business is just continuing to innovate and be relevant. And I'm really proud of how we've grown. You know, most people said I was crazy by starting a plant-based meal kit. I always said it was vegan food for non-vegans, mm-hmm. and people still thought I was crazy. 82% of our subscribers, though, are omnivorous, which is one of my favorite data points to share because it speaks to the purpose of what I started and why I started it. And, you know, we grew from my garage to a regional play to now national in scope. The partnership with Tom Brady and TB12 has been spectacular. And I really feel like we're just getting started with the ways we are engaging consumers, the purpose of our mission to be very, you know, mission-driven around the environment and people's health. And that differentiator is what's kept us, I think, so relevant in the space. And I know there's some really great things ahead that you'll be seeing in the months to come.
I've got to just say that, first of all, I'm glad I wasn't a customer back when you were doing this in your garage.
It was terrible.
I imagine there were a few bumps in the road and all that back when it was worked out of your garage.
Yes.
But, and I just want to end with this statement, and it's great about the omnivores data. This is going to be the thing where my listeners are going to think like I took a sponsorship or something. I live in Philadelphia. I'm trying to, you know, be vegan and reluctantly, and I'm fighting it. There's maybe 3 or 4 vegan restaurants, plant, vegetarian, vegan restaurants in Philadelphia. I even go to those. I'm a foodie. And it's like, all right, you know, they're, I'll have the portobello mushroom burger and it's fine. But like, it's not what I would normally want. I'm not making. So these are higher end Philadelphia restaurants. And I've never been happy there.
Have you been to Veg, Rich Landau's restaurant?
I've been to Veg depending on the dish. See, I'm a tough customer.
All right.
I've been to Veg, been to V Street, all these, pretty tough customer. Your kits, first time in a year where I've said, like, I can't wait to eat this meal again. Like, you guys have some buffalo tempeh tacos.
Those are amazing.
I save about 1 out of 3, almost 50% of your menus, because now I'm never going to go out and get the ingredients and do it, you know,
but you look cool to your daughter.
Yeah. Right. Right. But I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to make these. But seriously, like, I've thought about that meal. I had that. I don't remember when you guys delivered that, 4 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Something like that. I've thought of that meal so many times, and there's several, usually 1 out of 3. I'm like, it's better than what I get in the restaurants in Philadelphia. I don't think of those meals like, oh, I can't wait to go back to that restaurant and get that fake burger or whatever it is. This happens all the time with your meal kits. I mean, they're delicious. So even, you know, non-vegetarian, vegan people should just give it a try.
Well, thanks for saying that. You know, the food when it started out of my garage was not that great. It was not terribly innovative. And over time, we've evolved. And in the past year plus or so, we have an amazing head chef. Her name is Andrea. And she and her team create such incredible plant-based meals like those tempeh tacos with buffalo sauce. And the whole goal is to create meals that are so flavorful and so delicious that the person that's used to eating all sorts of animal protein is not going to miss those flavors because they are transformed in our products. And hopefully we're exposing people to a lot of new culinary techniques, new products, new foods, new flavors, and having some fun and knowing that at the end of the day, you're doing something really good for your own health and for the health of our environment.
That's the way I feel about it. And they're easy to make, easier than the other kits. So the genius of the chef or the team, and I don't even want to give your secret away, but I figured it out. It's sort of like, there's only 3 kind of moving pieces and they don't overlap time wise. So even a guy like me who can't cook can figure it out. So kudos on all of that.
Thank you so much.
Andy, thanks for making the time to come on the show. You gave some great wisdom, you know, in terms of career success, management success. And again, thanks for Purple Carrot.
Thank you so much. Great to speak with you.
LeadX family, before I go, I got to give you some straight talk. Now, there's about 10,000 of you listening to this podcast this week, and all 10,000 of you should be members of the online LeadX Academy. That's my company. That's my startup. That is the thing I'm most proud of in my career. These are on-demand, video-based courses you can take on your phone, on your iPad, on your computer, watch or listen in your car, on the treadmill. We've got courses on management, leadership, communication, and more. And just diving into it, you don't understand how much good stuff is there. We have 8 different courses on productivity. For example, one course is how to cure procrastination. You know, how different would your life be if you could eliminate procrastination? I've got a lesson on how severe is your procrastination, another on the 4 procrastination styles, the 9-step procrastination cure, and even advanced strategies to cure procrastination. Now, let's take a whole different area, personal branding. We've got 8 different courses in that content domain. So if you're a consultant, a speaker, a writer, or you want to be one someday, start building your brand now. I've got 1 course on how to write viral articles. You know, people say I am everywhere because of my articles that go out on Forbes and Huffington Post and, I mean, literally dozens of places. How to write viral articles. There's a lesson on how to read the mind of your reader. I always read the mind of my reader before I start the article. Same with my books, by the way. How do you write the perfect headline? What is the perfect article structure? What do you need to know about search engine optimization as you write your article? By the way, do you know that I have the most popular article on Forbes of all time? I think it's got about 26 million views. I wrote that article knowing how to read the minds of readers, write the headline, write for SEO. They're not all 26 million views, but that's how I did it. Try the LeadX Academy at leadx.org for free for 3 days. No risk. If you don't like it, then no harm, no foul. But right now, because we're technically pre-launch, it's at a ridiculously low $7 a month for a subscription. That's for the annual subscription. This is pre-launch special. Does it sound like I'm doing an infomercial? I'm selling you Ginsu knives. Yes, I know, but I need to break through to you. There's 10,000 of you that haven't signed up yet. Now, this price, we are going out of pre-launch. It's going to double in about a month. It's going to double a month after that. And the reason why you want to lock in your annual plan now is you're getting all this new stuff for the same $7. We're launching Microsoft Office training, a very cool 5-factor online personality assessment. And we're going to give you a chatbot powered by IBM Watson. Now, that's not coming till June, but you don't need to wait. It'll be a whole lot more expensive by June. So here's the takeaway. If you want to be a great boss, if you want to stand out and get ahead, visit leadx.org and just check out the free 3-day trial. And the final takeaway, leadership is influence. You influence when you take action and when you choose to be a bystander. It's just, which way are you going to be leading? Be mindful, be intentional. How will you lead today?